To mark this year's First World War centenary, Suzy Radio now presents A Village at War, the story in 8 episodes of Newdigate in Surrey during the conflict, written by John Colcutt. Episode 7.
As 1916 drew to a close, the Prime Minister, Mr. Asquith, resigned, following a disagreement in which he insisted on sitting as chairman in the newly formed War Committee. David Lloyd George was accordingly asked by the King to form a government. Still, none of the austerity associated with wartime existed. Over 1 million people previously involved in ill-paid, non-productive jobs were now earning 2 or 3 times as much, performing war work on farms, munitions factories, etc. Thus, the supplies of luxury goods also prospered. Trade in general was also booming. The export trade rose in 1916 to a figure which exceeded British exports in any of the years before the war except 1913.
December the 28th, 1916. My dear friends, it is nice to begin these few words with a hearty good wish that the new year may bring many blessings to you and those near and dear to you. Amidst all the gloom and sorrow that is affecting so many at this time, may you be able to look through the cloud of sorrows and see more fully than ever the joys which God will give to those who most truly love him.
Keep the home fires burning while your hearts are yearning. Though your lads are far away, they dream of home.
1917. In France, Sir Hubert Gough resolved to press forward in spite of the severe weather conditions. On January the 11th, when a thick morning mist, followed by a snowstorm, veiled all the Serre Plateau, a strong attack was delivered by English country regiments on the high ground above Ancre, east of Beaumont-Hebel. Very slowly, the English troops moved. They were ankle-deep in mud on the firm ground and up to their thighs in slime in other places. Notwithstanding all the difficulties of the ground, the German line was reached under cover of mist and snow before the hostile machine gunners could get to work. Some of the German officers fought to the death, but their men surrendered by the hundreds without a struggle.
At the Military Act Tribunal for the Dorking Rural Area, Frederick Chandler, aged 37, of Berghurst Cottage, farmer and timber merchant, was exempted on the grounds that his work was of national importance.
I make no apologies for repeating Lord French's letter regarding volunteers. I am of the opinion that all men physically fit between the ages of 45 and 60 are capable of performing the duties required of a volunteer, and it is with regard to men between these ages that I would ask you to make an appeal to their sense of duty and patriotism at this moment of crisis in the history of the Empire.
We all long for peace, but it must be an honourable one, and we must be certain to provide against the repetition of a war like the present one. We must have freedom for all countries, and the small states must be protected. Besides this, there must be full restitution and reparation. We must win the war, and the full conviction that we shall accomplish this grows every day. As the bishop says, we must not trust in our bows and arrows, but in the power of God. By this I mean we must do our utmost, and God will bless our endeavours. Germany has done much, but not what she expected. She did not take Paris in 2 months, and she will not land in England, but we must be prepared for the worst. Let us commit our cause to God and do on all occasions with our whole might what he would have us do.
On February the 1st, 1917, the Reverend H.G. Bird very kindly gave a treat, inviting the Sunday school children and members of the Newdigate choir. 4:30 p.m. found us all sitting round to tea, where we were gaily waited upon by Miss Heron, Mrs. Jansen, Miss M. Bird, Miss Ferrard, Mrs. Steeds, and above all, our most amusing rector. I am glad to say that another start has been made with the Village Fife and Drum Band after a very successful meeting on Tuesday the 20th of February. The time is approaching when bands will be wanted. How unfortunate it will be if the Newdigate Band is allowed to fail through lack of enthusiasm. Soon we hope to see our brave lads returning from the front to their village homes. What a regrettable thing it will be if we do not have a band to receive them and cheer them with old familiar tunes that were their delight in days gone by.
The agricultural industry was placed directly under the control of the state, much the same as the shipping and engineering industries. Armed with the powers under the Defence of the Realm Act, the Board of Agriculture would determine what additional land should be ploughed and who should plough it. A later order, dated March 15, 1917, made it legal for the Board to enter and take possession of any land which, in their opinion, was not being so cultivated as to increase, as far as practicable, the food supply of the country.
The window, in memory of the late Lieutenant Walter Fitzroy Heron, will be dedicated by Canon Chichester, Vicar of Dorking and Rural Dean, on Wednesday, April the 4th, at 3:30 p.m. We are all called upon to do all in our power to help win the war. No one who has a friend at the front will fail to do this. One of the ways by which we can all help is by using great economy of food, especially in meat, bread and sugar. We must all try to lessen the consumption of these things. We must do it not for our own sakes, but for others who are not so well off. If one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. We shall do all we can to lessen the suffering of others. Previously reported missing on the 19th of May 1917, it was officially reported that Private John Kempshall was killed in action on July the 14th, 1916.
The first contingent of American troops landed in France on the 25th of June 1917. Their numbers were few, and months of training was required before a major force could be sent. In fact, their first engagement was not until May 1918 at Chateau Thierry.
The Battle of Messines Ridge was a continuation of the British 1917 offensive and was important as possession of it allowed Germany a dominating observation position over Ypres. The attack by Sir Hubert Plumer's 2nd British Army had been well rehearsed and planned, and after constant bombardment from May the 27th to June the 6th, the attack was made on June the 7th at 3:10 a.m. Following the explosion of 19 mines, a most intensive artillery bombardment was aimed at the German lines. The infantry advanced with the support of 40 tanks. It was death to enter the huge craters, which were filled with gas from tons of ammonia, and even soldiers who approached the lip of the gigantic holes became dizzy and sick from drifting fumes. Barrels of burning oil were sent tumbling into the enemy trenches, and they broke in floods of flame into the dugouts. The operations at Messines came to an end on June the 14th and were deemed a great success. 4 Victoria Crosses were awarded.
The Newdigate Place, Fete and Sale on June the 6th was a great success in every way. Everyone must have enjoyed the afternoon, and the financial result was splendid. We are told that Newdigate will be able to send £200 as a result of the sale and donations received. The following very kindly took charge of the stalls and did a most roaring sale. Mrs. Nichols, Mrs. Palmer, Mrs. Hornsby, Miss Sade and Miss Bird. The hoopla, conducted by Mrs. Barris, Mrs. Junis, Mrs. Coinfoot, Miss Heron and Mr. and Mrs. Shepherd, was greatly patronised. Colonel Nichols kindly lent many war trophies, shell cases, German helmets, etc., which had been brought back from the war by his son.
A few days ago, Mr. F.E. Green of Baring's Field received information from Territorial Reserves that his son, Lieutenant David Green, had been killed in action. Happily, the information has proved unfounded. Mr. Green received the following telegram. Please cancel my telegram respecting 2nd Lieutenant D. Green. Error has been made by this office.
The Bishop's Letter, August 1917. My dear people, the third anniversaries are with us, and still there is war. War more intense, more devouring, more appalling than ever. And still our gallant fellows stick and serve and fight under the most intolerable strain. And from among them come the stories of individual heroism, that of the airman who plunges into the centre of the whole squadron of enemy planes, that of the private who swims back over the Yser under enemy fire to bring the end of a rope by which comrades who cannot swim and are between enemy and water may have a chance to get across and save their lives. These are just outstanding examples of what is done and men are ready to do by hundreds and thousands.
The major offensive at Passchendaele was launched on the 31st of July 1917, striking from Ypres towards the Belgian coast. All through the night of the 31st it rained steadily, and for 4 days afterwards the downpour was continuous. Sir Douglas Haig wrote, "The low-lying clayey soils, torn by shells and sodden with rain, turned to a succession of vast muddy pools. The valleys of the choked and overflowing streams were speedily transformed into long stretches of bog, impassable except by a few well-defined tracks, which became marks for the enemy's artillery. To leave these tracks was to risk death by drowning, and in the course of subsequent fighting on several occasions, men and pack animals were lost in this way."
Many flags can be seen in the windows of village cottages, and the following rhyme has become popular. "I am the flag in the window. I am born of the red, white and blue. And the stars that you count on my bosom are the sons I have taken from you. I tell of a home that is lonely, I speak of a vacant chair, and a mother's heart that is longing for news of her boys over there. Just pause in the day's busy hustle, don't pass me with only a glance. Say a prayer for the boys in the home camps and the ones who are somewhere in France."
The Bishop has asked me to draw to your attention the worrying attitude of a number of people. It is true that when we needed help from the weather for our crops, we have had pouring rain and a broken September. We go back to last autumn, when torrential rain reduced the country into liquid mud and choked, as with a bridle, our advance on the Somme. The weather has turned bosh. There is an instinct in most people to see some hand of providence in these things, but it is not a sound instinct. We must not let our hearts be hardened by taking them sullenly as the work of cruel fate, but they shall draw us nearer to God, in whose hands are all our ways.
We deeply sympathise with Mrs. Gadd in the great loss she has sustained by the death of her son, Private Percy Weller. It would indeed be difficult to find a straighter and nicer young man than Percy, and he will be greatly missed by all his numerous friends. Private Percy Weller, ASC, who has died at Basra from heatstroke, was the youngest son of Mrs. M. A. Gadd of Newdigate, where he was a member of the choir and also conductor of the bell ringers. He had been in the army about 12 months, and before he joined up, he worked at Dunsfold, where his wife and two infants are now living. Private Weller was 34 years of age and has another brother in France.
Military Act Tribunal, October the 13th, 1917. Walter John Carpenter, aged 40, baker and roundsman, exempted to April the 1st, 1918. Newdigate is especially proud of Sergeant E. Rowland, youngest son of Mr. and Mrs. H. Rowland of Church Cottages. During July 1916, he put a German machine gun out of action and was awarded the Military Medal. On October the 14th, 1917, there was a certain part of the line where they wanted to give Fritz a good hiding, and they were successful. Later, he was in charge of a bombing section, and after destroying several enemy dugouts, he is one of the last to return to our lines. For this, he was awarded a bar to his medal.
We are greatly indebted to Mrs. Jansen for her great kindness in taking such an interest and trouble in having the church apparatus attended to. It has been a very troublesome affair, and we think the mischief has been discovered and removed, and we trust the difficulty of having good fires is now a thing of the past. At any rate, the stove goes much better at present. Mr. F. E. Green has pointed out some startling facts in relation to boy labour and low wages in this neighbourhood. He was talking to the first workers' union meeting in the village.
On November the 8th, the extreme wing of the Petrograd Soviet, under the leadership of Lenin, announced that it had deposed the provisional government of Mr. Kerensky, and a proclamation was made for immediate peace. By the 17th, Lenin was in control of Moscow, and on December the 15th, an armistice was signed with Germany at Brest-Litovsk.
A very successful rummage sale was held on Wednesday, November the 21st, which left a balance in hand of over £29. We beg to express our deep sympathy with Mr. and Mrs. Hills, who have lost their youngest son, Cecil. He was of the 12th Australian Light Horse Brigade and died from wounds received in Palestine earlier this month. He came from Australia to fight for his old country. May God be with those near and dear to him in their great trouble. By the end of 1917, the population was feeling their own effects of the war. The early years of prosperity had gone as queues formed outside shops for foodstuffs. The air attacks on London, which by May 1918 had caused 836 deaths and 1,982 casualties, had spread their own brand of horror. The romantic vision of the war poets had changed into ghastly realism. Siegfried Sassoon wrote, "The place was rotten with dead, green, clumsy logs, high-booted, sprawled, and grovelled along the saps, and trunks, face downward in the sucking mud, wallowed like sandbags loosely filled."
You've been listening to A Village at War by John Colcutt. You heard the voices of Tina Colcutt as the commentator, Steph Bassett as the war correspondent, Lynn Voronetsky as the home correspondent, and David King as the rector. The programme was directed by John Colcutt and produced in Horsham by Tim Hartnell and David King. Join us tomorrow just after 8 p.m. for the final episode. This was a Suzy Radio production.